Hello and welcome back to Sacred Cinema with me, your host Jimmy Bernasconi on 2XX 98.3 FM. Today's episode, we're going to be having a look at the theme of maturity in the films of Sean Baker. Yes, welcome back to the show. I am your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, on 2XX FM on the 98.3 frequency. And today's topic, well, it's a little bit of a different one. In fact, we're making sacred cinema history, I think. Usually, if you're new to the show, usually we do pick a theme or a topic, something like love or family or something like that. And then we take a look at three or four films, and usually three, that maybe give insights into that theme, maybe provide a few lessons or explore those ideas in ways that might be a little bit thought-provoking or moving or something like that. This week we're taking a look at three films, all directed by one individual, and that would be Mr. Sean Baker. Now, part of the reason why we're doing this on this week's show is because I just saw Red Rocket, the film starring Simon Rex, and I was absolutely blown away by it. I think it might be one of my most favorite films I've seen at the cinemas the last in recent years, and I couldn't help but want to talk about it on the show. And you know, I've watched a couple of other Sean Baker films. We've talked about Tangerine on the show previously, that Christmas film, which I really like. I went back and watched a couple of other ones as well, some of his early ones, and I saw some common threads and some common themes, particularly regarding maturity, or at least growing up or age difference between two people who are somewhat reliant on each other, or, you know, one maybe looks after that sort of thing. You know, obviously we'll get into that a little bit this week. And I want to see how that sort of changed throughout Baker's work over the years. Now, if you're not familiar with Baker, he's a pretty indie guy. None of his films have been extremely, you know, Red Rocket's probably the biggest film that he's done so far. But if you're new to him, there's a couple of themes that kind of run throughout all of his films. The first one I would say, he's a big fan, obviously, of social realism. And he's spoken about this quite publicly in a lot of interviews and lectures and things like that, being very much inspired by the French New Wave, in particular Eric Rohmer, who is definitely a favorite of the show. He's also spoken about John Cassavetes, who obviously a big figure in American independent cinema, definitely delving into that, ideas about social realism and that sort of thing. And also Mike Lee, and we have spoken about some of Mike Lee's films on the show before. We spoke about Another Year, I think it was, that Jim Broadbent movie. So we're definitely going to be talking about another Mike Lee film a bit later in the show as well, because I think it definitely ties in with some of the stuff that Baker is talking about in one of these films in particular. But in just going back briefly to the influence that Eric Rohmer has had on Baker's work, it's unsurprising that a lot of these films are exploring the theme of sexual morality and delving into that sort of thing. We definitely talked a lot about that when we talked about Tangerine, and that's definitely a central theme in all the films we're going to talk about today as well. But there's a specific element of Baker's work, and he's also talked about this specifically with respect to Red Rocket. He definitely delves into this particular archetype that I've definitely observed myself, and I'm not going to restrict it to America. It's probably a bit of a Western, very modern Western archetype, but that's definitely come into prominence during sort of the Instagram era. But it can only be best described, I think, as this kind of person who is sort of very deceitful and disingenuous and narcissistic and irresponsible, usually like a young person in their 20s. And that sort of sounds like very, very vague and broad, but there's a very sort of, and I say this as one, there's a bit of a millennial energy about it, even though, you know, obviously some of these films were a bit older and that sort of thing. But I feel like there is a certain archetype that has emerged in recent years during, you know, as the ego has undergone this crazy, would you even call it a makeover, this big booster in everybody's brain in if you think about like TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and all this kind of obsession with making sure that we appear intelligent or learned or put together to the outside world, even though we might not have the qualifications to do so. That kind of character, I think, is in all of these films, where there's always a character in each of Baker's films, or at least in the three that we're going to talk about, who has a sort of this moment of insincerity. where they sort of engage in these acts of love or acts of admiration towards someone who's maybe a bit vulnerable around them to try and get something out of them. Maybe they put on a bit of a baby voice. And they're really just trying to, you know, trick them. They're very deceitful and very okay with just blatantly lying and turning up. It reminds me of a video I saw on YouTube the other day about this girl talking about, she was asked if she'd seen the movie Black Panther. And then someone had put these two clips together of her saying that she's seen it, and then another clip of her saying that she hadn't seen it. And the girl's not even famous or anything like that. I think it's just funny because it's like, why would someone, like, not only lie about something that, like, doesn't matter, like, whether you've seen that movie, but also, like, the way that she lies is so, like, you'd really believe it. And it's, I don't know, it's something that I've always found quite intriguing as well. And so that's part of the reason I love a lot of Baker's films, is that he has those characters in them. I think we did talk about that a little bit in Tangerine as well, so I don't want to just hammer that in too much. So as to be too repetitive. And finally, the other sort of mainstay theme, I think, in a lot of Baker's work is his interest in the relationships between two people who are sort of different generations. And we're going to talk about that in particular this week. So we're going to focus specifically on maturity and what that means and how that's explored by having two people, generally two characters next to each other, who are from different times of different generations and how they interact and how they sort of either empower or disempower each other. And I don't think we can ignore the fact that obviously, Baker has openly talked about how much the film Harold and Maude, directed by Hal Ashby, has influenced a lot of his work. And in the first film we're going to talk about this week, that's definitely evident. You can really see a lot of that. A lot of those themes coming through and also being inverted and reimagined in different ways and explored in different ways, but perhaps maybe more in a sexual context. But without any further ado, let's get on to that first film. And that would be the 2012 film Starlet. And this one stars Dree Hemingway, who people would know as being, I think she's the great-granddaughter of Ernest Hemingway. She's of that Hemingway family. And usually when we talk about the films on this show, I like to give a quick summary of the plot. In this one, I'm kind of going to break it into scene by scene in a way, because I think it is one of those films that does get progressively more interesting. Obviously a very low-budget film. This one was one of Baker's earlier films, or at least I think it was his fourth feature film, and it's very different to saying like Red Rocket or the other one we're going to talk about later today, The Florida Project. It obviously doesn't look as polished and shiny, I suppose, in that Hollywood sense. But if you do go out and watch this one, I would highly recommend sticking with it if at first you think that it's maybe looks a bit cheaper than the other ones, because it definitely does pull through by the end of it. I think that there's some really interesting scenes in this film. We start off with the character of Jane, played by Hemingway. And the first time we meet her, she's in this fairly bare room. And I actually kind of fell in love with this film straight away because it broke one of those key rules that they tell you in production design or art direction school. Not that I've been, but I've seen a lot of YouTube tutorials about you should never film a bedroom. You should never open your film with someone waking up in a bedroom and having bare walls. It's done to death. But I always feel like that's so relatable. I mean, we all start our days waking up, or we all start our days in our bedroom, or at least 9 days out of 10 we do. And for most of us, or not for most of us, for a lot of us, we don't have lots of posters of our favorite bands and movies and things like that on our walls. Like, I don't have any posters in my, on my bedroom or anything like that. I don't think I ever did. Or I had a couple of them when I was growing up a little bit, but only because I saw them in movies and stuff like that. Like, I never had this like urgency. Maybe you do. Maybe you should message the show if that's the case. But I love that this film starts with that. And it's actually an important plot point that Jane walks down the stairs and says to the guy that runs the house. I think he's not like the landlord. I think he's like in charge of rent or something like that. And she's talking about whether she can decorate her room because, you know, she wants to. I guess we're starting off of this platform of self-identity, trying to seek self-identity or self-expression, that sort of thing. So it's a really interesting metaphor at the beginning of the film that Jane is in this bare-walled room. And so she goes to a yard sale because she's not doing too well financially. We don't really know much about her at this point. I mean, if you've read up on the film, you probably do know where it's going. But she goes to this yard sale and she buys this thermos, which she wants to use as a vase, and she meets the lady that's selling it, and her name is Sadie. And at first, we don't really think much of Sadie, but she ends up being pretty important to the film. Anyway, Jane gets home and finds all this money inside the thermos, and that's basically the premise of the film. What is she going to do with all of this money that she found, that she innocently found in the thermos that she bought from this old lady? And throughout the rest of the film, you know, she goes back to Sadie's house and tries to give it back to her, but, you know, she's very dismissive and that sort of thing, and basically works out better if she just, you know, she thinks it's better if she sort of does a few chores for her, tries to pick her up in her car to take her to the grocery store and that sort of thing. And they form a bit of a, you know, an interesting relationship. But I suppose at the beginning of this film, one of the things we definitely have to delve into when talking about this film is the fact that their relationship is based around some kind of, it's sort of like a commercial relationship, right? The whole point, or the whole, you know, the whole origin of this relationship is about Jane trying to give Sadie back her money, or repay her for the money that she's accidentally acquired, right? So, to not give too much away, Jane is actually an adult film star as well. And I think what's really cool about this film is that we have these two aspects of Jane's life, which are both based around commercial transactions, right? So on the one hand, she's an adult film star, so in a way that she sells love, or she sells human connection, or the human touch, or, you know, a lot of the things that we talked about when we talked about that you know, when we talked about prostitution in that episode a couple of weeks ago. You know, sex work is about selling this illusion, or selling this experience of human connectivity, but doing it for money. So there's this sort of coldness to it. It's not completely genuine, but you are trying to give the illusion that it's genuine. You want to make the customer feel like you love them, when of course you couldn't possibly love them, because, you know, you're doing it through for a commercial transaction. Equally, even in this innocent relationship that she has with Sadie, that's also a commercial transaction. She's only providing that human connection, or let's call it love, because of some element of, I'm going to use a word, I don't know if it's a real word, but commerciality, right? She's only doing it because there's money involved. There's money at stake for Sadie, even though she doesn't really realize it. And there's almost this tragedy that boils up there, because you've got to start asking this question: is Jane, who's sort of been sucked into this world, or is, you know, fully encompassed, or you know, has been fully absorbed into this world of adult entertainment, has she sort of been conditioned, or is she sort of destined or bound to a life of relationships that are always underpinned by this commerciality? Is she able to engage in just a regular relationship, or is she doomed to only relate to people through commercial transactions? And to emphasize how prominent that is in this story, the other housemate that Jane has, her name is Melissa. She's also an adult film star, and she always gives this illusion of being really close with her and being her friend and all this sort of stuff. But she's always asking for money. She's a drug addict as well. And I should mention, I should have said this at the start of the show as well, but I think this is a really relevant point. I really think it's important to watch all of these films with a very, very open mind. And that sounds like a stupid thing to say. That sounds like something that you'd, you know, tell someone who's in kindergarten. But I really, for Baker's films, you really have to stick by them in a way, because he to put it bluntly, he's definitely conveying some characters that are definitely on the margins of society. And you don't want to get into too prejudicial a situation, I think, when you're watching these films. And that can be really challenging, especially in some of the other films we're going to talk about today. So Melissa is definitely one of those characters you want to hate, because she is very deceitful. She is in that sort of, she's the one that feels like that archetypal role in this film, the one I was mentioning earlier, that's sort of deceitful and very disingenuous and insincere, but, you know, sort of exploitative and that sort of thing. And so in that relationship as well, Jane, you know, is only friends with her because, you know, Melissa is trying to get money out of her, is trying to use her to further herself financially. So as the film progresses, we're kind of rooting for Jane and Sadie's relationship to sort of take off as something that's more than just something that's a commercial transaction, or is founded on a commercial transaction. And here we sort of see this, almost like this inversion of a Harold and Maude situation. If you haven't seen Harold and Maude, it's about a young guy who's, you know, from a very privileged background. And I guess you could say he's very obsessed with death. He keeps doing these sort of like these very theatrical attempts at suicide, which is sort of a bit funny, but they're also a bit kind of creepy. And he meets this character, Maude, who's this very live and let live, hippie kind of old lady who teaches him how to enjoy life and that sort of thing. And I suppose part of that relationship is about, you know, pulling him out of this state, this stale state, as being this very privileged upper class guy that doesn't really feel real love on a day-to-day basis, and makes him feel that excitement for life every day. We sort of see this inversion of that relationship. You know, Jane is learning about life through Sadie. She's finding the joy in life through Sadie. When they pack in their bag to go on this trip together, it's kind of this really sweet moment. It's quite a touching relationship, and they play bingo together, and it's kind of sweet. But it's not through that exciting, like, shake yourself awake kind of way. It's not in that carpe diem way. In fact, it's kind of the opposite of that. Jane's already kind of got that covered. She's an adult film star. She knows how to have a good time, right? If anything, her problems in life is that she is too used to having a good time. She's almost not hit a ceiling, almost hit a floor, hit the basement of living an exciting life in a way. There's too much room in her life for excitement. And she actually has nothing sweet or nothing soft or nothing to connect to that's actually genuinely based in love or is familial. He's saying that is she doesn't have any relationship with someone who's actually considerate and actually loving. So it's kind of by turning down the volume knob, kind of settling into her life, and engaging in more of a touching relationship that is one that you'd have with like your grandmother that makes her feel more whole. It's not by going out and running around and driving cars on the wrong side of the road. It's quite the opposite of that. So we're sort of seeing the other side of the coin in that relationship and how being in a relationship with a mature person can be very nourishing, but in a way that's a little bit more subtle. And I guess the best word is probably familial, to be in a relationship with someone that does treat you as someone that's part of their tribe, that you can count on. But at this point of the conversation, I think we need to ask this next question. Is that always the case? Are relationships with older people always nourishing? Are they always going to be saying that it is in our best interest? And how do we know when they're not? Before we go on to that question, I would like to remind you that you are listening to 2XX FM on the 98.3 frequency. I am your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, on Sacred Cinema. If you like what you're listening to, please stick around for more programming from 2XX if you're listening live. If you are listening on the on-demand platform, feel free to sponsor the show or contact 2XX about sponsoring a show or subscribing to the station in general. That would be very much appreciated. We love people who support people-powered radio. Moving on now, though, to the 2017 film directed by Baker, and this would be The Florida Project, which kind of put Baker on the map, I suppose, in more mainstream circles. I mean, this is a film that I remember coming out of the movies, and I didn't actually see it at the movies, but I remember contemplating seeing it or something else on at the time, and that's probably one of the biggest regrets of my life, I think. I didn't see this movie earlier in my life. To put it simply, this is a... I mean, the plot is very simple in this film. It's about a six-year-old girl named Mooney who lives with her mother, Haley, in a motel near Disney World in Orlando. And the first thing you've got to say when talking about this film is just the color of it. I almost contemplated doing an episode just on films set in Florida and looking at this film and looking at something like Spring Breakers or... I mean, there's so many films that are set, A Night in Miami or, any films that are set in Scarface or anything. I mean, Florida itself is... So, I mean, what about Waves as well? All these films are so colorful, yet there is this disgusting, grimy dirtiness that's every broken glass and drunk people and crazy people and unmowed lawns and dirty sewers and that sort of thing. It's this mishmash of the Disney World is there. It's a mishmash of Mickey Mouse and a dead mouse in the gutter. Like it's everything that's magical and everything that's horrible about the world, all just smashed into one. There's no doubt that of course it is one of the critical states in a U.S. Presidential election. I think that it's very clear why that might be, because you've got you've got the two big pillars of American society just clashing into each other. So I think that's the first thing to mention, that the colors in this film are just I think we mentioned this when we talked about Tangerine, the color scheme in that as well, but obviously Baker carries on his interest in taking these establishing shots or these still shots of the very colorful, elaborate fast food restaurants as well. We see a lot of that in this film. So just beware going into this one. It's almost quite delicious in this sort of buffet of colors that the color scheme that you're given, and everything's very well coordinated in the costumes, everything like that. But And that all sort of makes it the perfect background for the actual story that's going on here, because it's mainly a social commentary about homelessness, right? Obviously, they're not doing too well. Hayley is not doing particularly well. She's not really providing that much for her daughter. And so it sort of flips the starlet idea on its head in a way, because in Star we have this idea that, you know, by having this relationship with this older, more mature figure, Dree Hemingway's character, Jane, she's able to enjoy her life or feel a bit more whole. In this case, Mooney, this young 6-year-old girl, we're worried about her the entire time, that this situation that she's found herself is going to lead her into a very bad life. We're not really sure what's going to happen. And her mother is extremely off the charts. She's the one that fills the boots of that very insincere, very irresponsible, very narcissistic figure in this film. And at no point, and I guess the first sort of tragic element of this film is that at no point does Mooney know any of this, because she's 6 years old and her mum buys her soft drink and she buys her pizza. And we've all sort of seen this. You probably, when you're a young kid, or maybe you know this sort of situation right now in your life. But I remember, you know, being in primary school and seeing a lot of, I used to think a lot about the kids that would have the money to go to the canteen every week, but it wasn't necessarily because they were well off. It was because their parents kind of just gave them whatever they wanted. So this film is definitely dealing with this idea of, like, what happens, or how do we feel about situations in which a vulnerable person, i.e. a 6-year-old, isn't able to see the true malevolence or the true undesirability of the authority figure that is in charge of them, because Mooney never realizes it. And she's actually quite, she's almost quite distrustful of the people that actually do have her best interests at heart. And that's where we see the emergence of Willem Dafoe's character. He's not always fun. He is sort of that orderly, bossy figure. And he is actually trying to keep Mooney out of trouble. And she's always making fun of him, that sort of thing. And it is quite tragic, because we know that he is trying to protect her, and he actually does. And he's quite heroic in a lot of scenes in this film. And he's such a beautiful character. I mean, the second, I think what I consider sort of the second tragedy of this film is not only the negligence that you know, how negligent Hayley is, but the fact that Willem Dafoe's character can't make up for it. The extent to which Hayley is negligent cannot be made up for through discipline. That would be too authoritative. And we see that in Willem Dafoe's. This is a great performance from him. And with those two characters side by side, it almost reminded me a little bit of that friend/boss complex you see in shows like The Office, where, you know, you can't be both the master and the slave of the child or of the employee. You know, you've got to pick one. You're either the friend or you're the boss. You can't have it both ways. You can't, you know, fire someone one day and then use their bonus check to pay for a Christmas party the next day, right? You can't have that. And you sort of have these two main sort of parental figures kind of in this battle throughout this film. So we're definitely seeing the fact that it is a possibility to be able to, you know, bring a vulnerable person into a good life, to put them on the right path, but that can so easily be corrupted by a very negligent authority figure. And I think that idea is very well built on, Baker builds on this very well in the final film that we're going to talk about today. And that would be Red Rocket, starring the wonderful Simon Rex, who you may know from Scary Movies 3, 4, and 5. And there's a very deliberate reason why he has been asked to be the main character, or the main actor in this, the lead, I should say, in this film. It's because he plays a former adult film star, and Simon Rex was actually a former adult film star, by the name of Mikey Saber. That's his name. I don't know what Simon Rex's actual name was when he was an adult film star, but the character he plays in this film is his name is Mikey Davies, but he goes by Mikey Saber in his films. And he returns back to his hometown of Texas City after living it up in Los Angeles for 20 years. And he moves back in with his ex-wife, and then he goes to this donut shop, very similar to the one in Tangerine, and he sees this girl working behind the counter, and her name is Strawberry. She's this young high school student, and he sees a future in her back in the valley, back in Los Angeles. And that's essentially the premise of this film, which is how does he deal with that, knowing that he sees this great future for this young innocent girl from Texas City in the challenging world of adult in the adult film industry. Now, before we get on too much into this film, I want us to talk about how it builds on Florida Project, because we only talked about that film quite briefly. In Florida Project, we got into the territory of, you know, the dangers of someone not being aware that the person that's supposed to be helping them, the person that's supposed to be guiding them in life, not having them in their best interest. But that film's kind of it's kind of okay to deal with. We sort of know how we feel about the film because we probably don't feel that much sympathy, or we probably don't really like Hayley's character too much in that film. She's not particularly funny or charming. Why Red Rocket to me is such a powerful film is that Simon Rex's character is so charismatic, and I mean, Baker's talked about this in a lot of the interviews about the film, but he is so, I find him so funny and so charismatic, but he is such a horrible person as well, and this really challenges you as an audience member, or at least challenged me as an audience member to really check how dangerous that can be to be brought into that world, and to see someone like this innocent strawberry character, or so, you know, she's trying to mature, she's trying to treat herself like a grown. She reminded me a lot of the, you know, we talked about a film, Fish Tank, a couple of weeks ago. A lot of similarities between this film and that film, and a lot of Baker's films and that film. So I guess in the context of Baker's films as a whole, I think what Red Rocket does is it's not just about this authority figure or someone with more maturity, supposedly, or with a superior figure having control over an innocent, vulnerable person, but also having control over us as an audience member, us letting it slide as we watch it, not being so agitated by it as we probably should be as we see horrible events unfolding, or at least events unfolding that could lead to very horrible consequences. And this is very reminiscent of a film that Baker has spoken about called Naked, directed by Mike Lee, which is a very similar plot structure. Naked is about a fellow who returns comes to London because he's made some trouble in another city, very similar to Red Rocket. He shows up at his ex-girlfriend's house, also very similar to Red Rocket, and tries to stay there. His ex is actually quite accommodating of him, which is almost kind of like eerie, and like, it's just kind of like weird that she is so like accommodating with this guy that's clearly like a bit of a crazy dude. And that also kind of happens a bit in Red Rocket as well. But I think the main thing as well in this one is that they're both very charismatic, but charismatic in very different ways. I think the main difference between the two is that in Naked, our protagonist kind of, and I don't want to get into it too much because I want to kind of talk about it in another episode, I think. But he kind of knows that he's a bad guy, or at least accepts it, and more blames it on the state of nature that he's in. The world itself is in a nihilistic state, and there's no reason why we should appreciate morality or ethics or anything like that. It kind of steers into that. Whereas why I think this film is a little bit, maybe a little bit more challenging for a viewer, or at least more challenging in this aspect, is that I don't think that at any point in this film does Mikey acknowledge the fact that he is immoral. He has disposed of morality, but there's a lot of moral grandstanding in the film in particular, and sort of treats himself to be someone that actually is an adherent of, you know, does actually live a good life and is doing the right thing for himself and Strawberry. So we sort of have this very dangerous situation coming about. So how do we tie all three of these films together? Well, I think the first thing is to be said that we do need to acknowledge that looking to our elders, looking to someone who is more mature and has some life experience, is not only necessarily educative, but it can be something that's extremely nourishing on an emotional level. But we do have to be very careful of that. That, you know, that can very often be something that does hinder us. And when we give someone too much power over us, saying that some power that they just have naturally, maybe by being a parent or a teacher or something like that, that we don't have really a choice around. But we do need to be very careful when we do have a choice, that we're not blinded by charisma. Very often we can find someone to be very funny and charming and take that to be enough of a reason to have trust in them. In fact, it's all too often the case that the very reason why we find someone so appealing is because they don't really have our best interests at heart. So that's all we have time for on Sacred Cinema this week. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, on 2XX 98.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening, and continue to listen for more quality programming from 2XX, people-powered radio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again very soon.